This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new book, How to Be Black, is part memoir and part satirical guidebook. My guest is the author, Baratunde Thurston. He's a stand-up comic, the director of digital for the satirical newspaper The Onion, and co-founder of the blog Jack and Jill Politics. The guidebook part of his book has chapters like How to Be the Black Friend, How to Speak for All Black People, How to Be the Black Employee, How to Be the Angry Negro, and How to Be the Next Black President. The memoir part of his book is about the different cultures he's been exposed to, like being enrolled in a Quaker private school and an Afrocentric program at the same time. And it's about how his life does and does not fit the popular concept of blackness, a concept he describes as hip-hop, crime in prison, fatherless homes, high blood pressure, school dropouts, drugs, athleticism, musical talent, The Wire, affirmative action, poverty, diabetes, the civil rights movement, and recently, the U.S. presidency. Baratunde Thurston, welcome to Fresh Air.
It is great to be here. Thanks, Terry.
So I'd like you to do a reading from your new book, How to Be Black. And it's a very autobiographical part of the book.
Yes, it is.
Would you read it for us?
Absolutely. My name is Baratunde Thurston, and I've been black for over 30 years. I was born in 1977 in Washington, D.C., in the wake of civil rights, black power, and Sanford and Son. My mother was a pro-black, pan-African, tofu-eating hippie who had me memorizing the countries of Africa and reading about apartheid before my 10th birthday. My Nigerian name was not handed down to me from any known lineage, but rather claimed and bestowed upon me by parents who demanded a connection, any connection at all, to Mother Africa. Yes, I grew up in the inner city at 1522 Newton Street, and I survived D.C.'s drug wars. Yes, my father was absent. He was shot to death in those same drug wars. But it's also true that I graduated from Sidwell Friends School, the educational home of Chelsea Clinton and the Obama girls, and Harvard University. I love classical music, computers, and camping. I've gone clubbing with the president of Georgia, the country, twice. My version of being black adheres as much to the stereotypes as it dramatically breaks from them. And that's probably true for most of you reading this. If not about blackness itself, then about something else related to your identity. Through my stories, I hope to expose you to another side of the black experience while offering practical comedic advice based on my own painful lessons learned.
Oh, great. Thanks for reading that.
Thank you.
And that's from Baratunde Thurston's new book, How to Be Black. So let's start with your name, which you say some really interesting things about in the book, the name being Baratunde Thurston.
Yes.
Very African first name, very...
not African last name.
Very not African second name, yes.
Yeah.
And you say, my name has served as a perfect window through which to examine my experience of blackness.
Yes.
So how were you named, Baratunde?
So I was named, as most children, by my parents. And for them, it wasn't simply a name, and it wasn't grabbing an ancestral name or a grandfather or grandmother. It was a political act on their part. My mother was very much this pan-African hippie type of woman, and she marched in the streets, and I have photos of her taking over radio stations. And there was a phase in African-American history, especially in the 60s and 70s, where parents were trying to get back to Africa. And if they couldn't physically do it, they did it by naming their child something African. So they were flipping through books, looking for a name that had a particular meaning. And in my case, my mother had had a series of miscarriages before I was born. And so they were looking for something extra deep, and they found this name Babatunde. And Babatunde is a very common Nigerian name. It means the spirit of my mother's grandfather returns in me. In the same book, they also saw Baratunde, of slight derivation, a little tweak with an R instead of the B. And the book also explained that Baratunde means one who is chosen, which I have to clarify with people. It doesn't mean the chosen one. That's a lot of pressure. It's one who is chosen. There could be like 50 chosen people, 1,000. The chosen one, usually life ends poorly for that person. So I'm happy to be one who is chosen. And my middle name is actually Arabic. It's Rafiq. And Rafiq means friend or companion. So the combination of Baratunde Rafiq is to mean kingly companion. And that's the total history of how I got that name.
So what reaction did you get to your name typically from white people, from African Americans, and from Africans?
So very early on, teachers started shortening my name. They didn't want to deal with Baratunde. It was a little strange even for them, so they called me Barry. Actually, Barrington was the first
name. Was the same with Barack Obama, right?
Yeah,
he was Barry.
Yeah. So I'm just like the president. Yeah. I control the nuclear arsenal.
Exactly.
I occasionally disappoint my progressive base, but I'm generally a good guy. I was Barrington, then I was Barry, and halfway through my middle school time at Sidwell Friends, it was seventh grade, and it just clicked in me. My name's Baratunde. That's a great name. People should call me that. And I had to actually convert the school to call me not Barry, but Baratunde. Because once people know what they call you, even if you don't approve of it, you know, nicknames, Chester is chest hair, right? Just stuff like that. It takes a long time to kind of undo that. So it took a couple of years to retrain people, but I finally fully asserted Baratunde as the name I should have. So people usually, they assume there's a nickname, and they'll just jump to it. Or they say, what do people call you for short? And I say, Baratunde. Just say it faster. You can save time and be a little bit more efficient if you're really worried about the time it takes to say the name.
So what assumptions were made about you because of your name?
Well, so it's really, I have different audiences that take it differently. First of all, I meet Nigerians, and many of them are initially really excited because they're like, oh, one of our brothers. But then they're like, wait, Baratunde? You mean Babatunde? And I'm like, no, I mean Baratunde. Well, where'd you get the name and who did this? And so they have excitement, then frustration, then judgment often.
And the judgment is like, well, you're not really Nigerian.
Exactly, that I'm not authentically Nigerian, that I'm not really African, which is just fun given the idea of why I was given the name. Because I'm not really fully American either because of the history, this was my mother's attempt and I didn't have any say in it. But I like the sound and I like the meaning. So I have that community. Then you have kind of the more American-born black people who really generally don't have that much of a reaction. Because I think American blacks are so used to very interesting names in our community, whether they're derived from Africa or just made up from cars, plus like a candy bar and the name of the street you grew up on. Like that's a pretty unique tradition. And then, you know, from white Americans, it's often the assumption of, well, you got to have a nickname. Or what does it mean? It's got to have some super deep meaning. And in my case, it actually does.
Because it was an African name, a name meant to connect you to Africa, because your parents, or at least your mother, was very interested in that connection, did you feel that connection when you were growing up?
I did, and my mother wouldn't let me not feel that connection either. It was a part of my programming as a kid growing up. So grew up in D.C. in the Columbia Heights neighborhood before it became as shiny as it is today. And my mother, after sixth grade, enrolled me at Sidwell Friends School, which is a great private school. The Obama girls go there now. But she also, at the same time, enrolled me in what's known as a rites of passage program. And in the 60s, you know, along with black power, there was even a subset of Pan-Africanism where people were really trying to reclaim this connection and borrowing and learning from traditions. So you could think of it sort of as a Hebrew school or a bar mitzvah for blackness. And every, you know, weekday I'd be at Sidwell learning Sidwell-type things, and it's field hockey and lacrosse and the sons of presidents and daughters of World Health Organization people. And then every Saturday morning from maybe 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., we'd have physical training. We'd read books like the ISIS Papers. We'd read Toussaint Louverture, and we would dance and do all sorts of cultural and intellectual activities to try to ground us in what they thought was a more appropriate Africanness. In that era, it was also a time when crack was ravaging communities, and there was a special focus on how do we preserve young black boys and prevent them from ending up in the criminal justice system. So that was also an angle. So I had this balanced experience of like Sidwell by weekday, Ankobia, which is the name of the program, on the weekends, and that was kind of my strongest grounding. But then even at home, it didn't stop. My mom had this big map of Africa on her bedroom wall, and it had all the nations carved out, and she would actually quiz me.
And you keep describing your mother as like a hippie, and you know, tofu and carob and all that. So how was she accepted in your neighborhood? Was she considered like the hippie of the neighborhood, and was that a bad thing?
She was not in any way ostracized. I mean, my mom also had this sort of hybrid personality. When she grew up, I think it was 4th Street Northwest. I'd have to double check. I didn't get that deep into her bio. But she had, you know, she ran the street. She was in gangs. She was also super political. And she was a crunchy hippie lady. She went through her own evolution, grew up in a Baptist church, kind of rejected that because of the images of whiteness all around. She's like, wait, they can't all be white. You know, if civilization began in Africa, the logical conclusion is. So she was kind of ahead of her time on that. And then she became vegetarian and started hanging out with the hippie type people. But that wasn't the full extent of her personality. And she was still kind of a badass as well. So I think she had, from my young eyes and recollection, a lot of respect in the neighborhood.
So in the reading that you did
yeah.
at the beginning of the show, you kind of like drop in that your father was killed during the crack epidemic. And he was murdered during a drug deal that went bad.
Yeah.
And he was the person buying, not selling.
Right.
And you say in your book, the only thing that could have been more cliched at the time,
mm-hmm.
and you say this with great sorrow, but that the only thing that could be more cliched at the time was if the deal had gone down at a KFC.
Yes, I did write that.
How old were you when that happened, six?
I was 5 or 6 years old, yeah.
How did your mother tell you what happened?
So there was a phone call that she had received. And what you have to understand, my father did not live with us at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I had very few memories and interactions with him. But I knew I had a father, and I'm pretty sure he loved me a lot, and I probably loved him in any way a 4 or 5 year old kid can actually know what love means for a father. But she got a call, and